Hello, and welcome to the Bookcast Club, a podcast for people who love books. And today, I'm joining you from Indianapolis, and Sarah is joining you from the Netherlands, and we are going to continue our discussion about fantasy books. Last year, we had a really great discussion about fantasy books for beginners, and we want to further that with even more fantasy book recommendations. But before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about what we've been reading. What have you been reading, Sarah?
Well, hello, Chris. What have I been reading? I'm currently reading the Elizabeth Strout trilogy thing, the My Name is Lucy Barton trilogy. So the third book in that, which is called O William, got nominated for the Booker. And yeah, and it's the third trilogy. So this time, previously, in previous incidences of the third book in a trilogy being nominated for a Booker, I have refused to read the first one and two. Tissy Dangarambas, A Small Normal Body, and what was the other one? Jon Foss's trilogy that was long listed for the International Booker this year. I refuse to read those, but this year I'm being, I don't know, very generous or something. So I read My Name is Lucy Barton earlier this week, and now I'm reading Anything is Possible, which is the second one. And they're about a family in, I think, have I talked about these before? I think I talked about them on a Patreon episode, so I'll do it quickly.
No. I was agreeing that, yes, it was a Patreon episode.
Yeah. So it's about a woman who grows up in a pretty small town somewhere in the US, somewhere very rural. Let's say Indianapolis. It's always near there. Oh, that's not a small town. Let's say Indiana. And she is treated very, very badly by her family, or by her parents specifically. And then in the first book, it's many, many years later, and she's really sick. She's in hospital, and her mother comes to visit her. And you're just put in the story. There's no introduction to it. And so while the story is taking place and while she's talking to her mother and they're having these kind of awkward interactions at the hospital, you kind of start to realize as a reader that she has been treated awfully and they have this awful history, and you sort of start to understand what's going on. And then the second book goes back in time. It doesn't go back in time. It goes back to the town that they were born in, and it's all short stories set from different people's perspective that are in the town. And you're sort of looking at the impact of this family, why they were treated so badly, how they were treated as kind of pariahs by the other people in the town. And I'm really enjoying them. They're very quiet, but they're quiet but competent. Can I say that? They're not sort of huge or flashy. They're not going to change your life, but as novels, I think they're really good. So I was initially a little bit surprised to see it on the book along list, which I think a lot of people were. But now that I have read them, I can see what's going on. I understand it a bit.
I read My Name is Lucy Barton back when it first came out, and I actually really enjoyed it. And then I never continued on with the series as it came out. I think that those books, their covers, even their titles and stuff like that, I think that they don't do the books very much justice. I think they make the books seem like they're going to be much more saccharine and simple than they are. Almost like, I don't know, they give me the Beartown author vibes when I hear the titles and see the covers. Kaufman, yeah. And they're not like that, really. I think they're quite literary and interesting, and I think they're doing cool things. And yeah, I guess that's all I really got to say. I just think the marketing has kind of failed them a little bit, to be honest.
Totally. I would never have picked them up ever for that exact reason.
They look and sound like granny fiction, like when you hear them.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that's a real shame, because I really liked My Name is Lucy Barton, and I do want to continue with that series, which I will be, because I want to read the long list. I also hate the title of the new one, O William. Just terrible. I guess, like, I imagine it being said in, like, this fawning voice of, like, O William or something, like, whenever I see it, especially because, like, I don't know, there's something about it I just really don't like.
So you are going to read the book along this, is what I just heard.
Oh, yeah. I am trying my damnedest. I've got Booth I've purchased, and I've got Maps of Our Spectacular Bodies by Maddie Mortimer, and a lot of the long list is actually very difficult to get a hold of in the US, so I don't know how everything is going to work out, but yeah, there's a lot of them that, like, my libraries just do not carry, and I can't really find, like, I don't know what's going on, so yeah, we'll see kind of how all that works out. I might end up just initially reading the shortlist when it gets announced. There's a few that I'm kind of betting on being on the shortlist, like Maps of Our Spectacular Bodies. I'm just really betting on that being there. Same with Booth by Karen Joy Fowler. I'm kind of betting on that being there just because I feel like there's a lot of Karen Joy Fowler fans. So yeah, I'm going to try and be like as efficient as possible as far as what I choose, that I make sure to be able to read all the shortlist at least when it's announced.
I'll be interested to hear what you think of Booth, actually.
I'm quite excited about it.
Okay.
I've never actually read Karen Joy Fowler, but she was in a documentary that was done, oh my God, years and years and years ago about women in science fiction. And I loved her in that documentary. I'll try and find like a link to it so we can put it in the show notes, but I found her very interesting and I liked her interviews and all that different stuff. And so I've been like eager to try Karen Joy Fowler ever since. It was when she was very young in her career, like very young. Mm-hmm. I think the documentary was done in like the 80s or 70s.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't love Booth, but I would be very interested to hear from your perspective.
Mm-hmm. Does it have science fictional elements to it? I mean, she's kind of...
No.
No, interesting.
Nothing. Nothing at all. It's completely... It's like a pure historical fiction.
Interesting. Well, let's see. What have I been reading? I finished two books that I've absolutely loved. One is I finally read In the Woods by Tana French. And I freaking loved it. I really loved it. Yeah, it was one of those books that is absolutely gripping. And I'm always trying to find crime fiction out there that really balances, like, literary merit with a thrilling plot, you know? And it's kind of hard to find that. And I've had more success with books that have been marketed as literary fiction with crime elements than I have with books that have been marketed more as thrillers, the way that In the Woods has been. But I... fantastic book. It's about it's quite interesting. It's about these two detectives on the Dublin murder squad, and one of them is a guy named Robert, and he has a history in that when he was a child, two of his friends were kidnapped and presumably killed because a lot of their blood was found, and he was the sole survivor of this massacre, and they found him in the woods clinging to a tree, traumatized, and he didn't speak for I think like 2 weeks, and when he finally did, he had absolutely no memories of the incident, and he lives his whole life not remembering anything about this incident. Then he becomes a detective on this murder squad, and he's hidden his past from everybody in order to be able to stay on this squad, I think because he was worried about, like, becoming a police detective with this history. Would he be put on the cases and stuff like that? And a young woman has just been killed. I say young woman, she was only 12 years old, has just been killed in the same town outside of the same woods where his friends disappeared. He's assigned to the case and nobody knows that he's actually linked back to a history. And the book is going into what happened, how did she disappear, does this link back to what happened in the 80s when he was a kid in this town? And it's a lot about the relationship between him and his partner Cassie, who he's very, very close to. They're like almost siblings. Everybody expects them to be like a romantic pair, but they're not. They're just incredibly, incredibly close. And you watch as this like dark kind of psychological forces start to kind of spin out in him as he's going deeper and deeper into this case. And the whole thing was just riveting with an incredible sense of place and fantastic descriptions, beautiful writing, and a really thrilling plot. I absolutely loved it, and I cannot wait to read more of the Dublin Murder Squad. Have you read this one, Sarah?
No, I don't think I've read anything by her. Let me just look it up.
I highly recommend her if you haven't.
Yeah, I haven't read any of these. I know them, of course. I know them, of course. But yeah, I haven't read them. It sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a very unusual move on your part.
Yeah, I had read the books by J.K. Rowling under Robert Galbraith, and I really liked those books, embarrassingly. Mm-hmm. Like, loved them. Especially as audiobooks. That audiobook narrator is just like chef's kiss, amazing. Mm-hmm. And then when J.K. Rowling went just like full turf, I became very uncomfortable with supporting her current works. And so I haven't continued on, and I've been kind of wanting a replacement to that. And I think that this one, as far as like the literary talent on display here, it just really blows J.K. Rowling out of the water, while also offering the same type of like insightful characterization into the lead detective. So if you liked that from the J.K. Rowling books, mm-hmm. I really think you would like In the Woods.
Okay. That's a good show, because I know a lot of people are like trying to find a replacement mm-hmm. for that kind of sort of character-driven
yeah.
detective novel, which is pretty rare.
Yeah.
The only books that I've read, I've read the Robert Galbraith or the J.K. Rowling books as well, and I know what you mean. They are quite unique in that way. The only books that I've read that are kind of close-ish are the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series.
I never read those. They were like the big buzz when I was like probably like early high school, middle school, and I just never really got into them.
They've got that, yeah, like quite comprehensive sort of character development, which is really good. They sound kind of similar to the one you just described, actually. What was it called?
In the Woods.
In the Woods.
Yeah, really, really great book. And I loved the ending. I feel like it's one of those endings that would probably frustrate a lot of people, but I loved it. Like, I was like, yep, that's exactly... I don't love an ending that ties up every single loose strand. And I feel like sometimes mystery readers and crime readers, they want that satisfaction of the tidy bow. And I think it can be tempting as a genre writer to give it. And I love it when authors don't. I'm like, I want a dissatisfying ending to some degree, you know, things left in the air. And I love that about that book. And then the other book I've read and loved is The Last Days by Allie Miller, which is a memoir. I've reviewed it kind of extensively on my channel. So if you watch my YouTube channel, it's going to be a lot of repetition. But this is Allie's life as a Jehovah's Witness, how she grew up in the religion, developed an eating disorder inside the religion, got married, had a kid, and then how she ultimately left it. And it's an incredibly literary memoir. I know I had talked about Amber Scora's memoir, Leaving the Witness. I feel like that book is a little bit more buzzy in its tone, I guess, whereas this one is much more of a quiet coming of age story. And yeah, I freaking loved it. People like the comp that it's been given by its publisher and blurbs is Tara Westover's Educated, which I really can't speak to because I haven't read Educated myself, but it's a really fantastic book. It's very poetic and lyrical in its writing style. The way that she kind of captures young adulthood in the religion was really quite interesting. She chose to write the memoir in this present tense, which I hadn't seen before really in memoir, but it was really effective because it allowed you to kind of be in the moment with her, experiencing all these different things inside the religion and learning about the religion that way, rather than having this kind of reflective element of the book kind of explaining itself. And yeah, I freaking loved it. Obviously, I've talked about it before. I'm an ex-Jehovah's Witness as well. And it's just really gratifying to see such good books coming out like this. And I even got to interview her on my YouTube channel, so if you're interested in that, you can check it out. But it was a really fun interview and just a really great book.
Yeah, it was a good interview. Should put the link in the show notes. Yeah, interesting. It's funny how these things, I feel like just the last like 18 months there's been a few witness books coming out, and before that I don't think I know of any.
No, but that's the way the publishing industry works, I think. It's like one person writes something, and then publishers see that there's an audience, and then they start gathering, you know, steam and stuff like that. Because, yeah, over the past 18 months, like I said, in that interview, we've had, like, Rainbow Milk by Paul Mendez, Leaving the Witness, this book, and then...
Oh, yeah, I forgot Rainbow Milk is about witnesses as well.
Yeah, and then Kit DeWall is coming out with a memoir, which she was also a witness, and she touches on that in the childhood sections of that memoir. That actually just came out, I think, this past week in the UK. So yeah, there's a lot more stories coming out about it, and so it's pretty exciting.
I have read Educated, and it sounds different to me, the Abby Miller one, to Educated, because Educated, it's sort of marketed as being about Mormonism, and it kind of is, except Tara Westover's father basically removed his family from the Mormon church, and they kind of started their own, like, it's not really a cult because it's just their family, basically. But it's all done by her own father, and it's not really, the church is kind of involved, but not really. And he ends up not trusting them at all. So I don't really know how I feel about Educated, because it's the experiences that she's telling you as if it's kind of like Mormonism, but it's very unique to her own experience, because it's completely solely driven by her father, who is obviously a seriously ill man. Like, he has like hallucinations, and he has very strong like paranoid beliefs. So I was a bit uncomfortable reading it, because it's sort of like the way that my severely ill father made my family suffer is like really what it is. And it's not really I didn't feel that it was sort of, you're not really tackling like the sort of structural problems of Mormonism, really, because her father is just like a total, I guess he's like a conspiracy theorist, but he's like, he's really, really ill, obviously. And and they all suffer at the sort of his hand. And then it sort of turns into this like Hollywood story at the end. And it all just kind of works out very well. And I don't know.
Yeah, Ali's book I was going to say, Ali's book is definitely not like a Hollywood story in the end, you know. It has quite a powerful ending, actually. I love the ending of that book. And I think if anyone reads it, the last two pages of that book are phenomenal. Like, some of the best written passages about the subject I've ever read. And it's interesting what you said about Educated and kind of not being about like the structural problems of Mormonism. Have you read A Song for Issy Bradley by Karis Bray?
No.
I think if you want a book that's a much more deep dive into Mormonism and its effects, you would really like that book. It's about a family where the youngest child ends up dying, and then everybody in that family has to cope with what's happened. All the teenagers, the parents, and all of them under the shadow of the Mormon church, and the way that, you know, plays on their day-to-day experiences. That was a very interesting book, especially because the Mormons are very different from Jehovah's Witnesses in terms of their theology, but very similar in terms of their organizational structures. And so there were moments in that book that I like really related to, where I was like, wow, this feels just like my childhood. And it's just a really, really well done story. And Kara Spray is a former Mormon, and I believe she had a child who died while she was in the church. And I think it's quite semi-autobiographical. And it's a fantastic book that definitely tackles more of like mainstream Mormonism.
Very professional. I'm going to do a callback to a past episode. In episode number 68, we talked about some of our favorite nonfictions, and I talked about Under the Banner of Heaven by John Krakauer, which is about early Mormonism and specifically about the sort of polygamy division in the Mormon church and how you have some people following polygamy, well, quote unquote polygamy, and other people not, and how that kind of started. And that's a really, really interesting look at Mormonism and like and how that's like affected Mormonism today. So I really recommend that if you're interested in Mormonism. We want to take a quick break to let you know about the ways that you can support the podcast. A really effective and free way of showing your support is by rating and reviewing us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can share our posts on social media. We are at the Bookcast Club on both Instagram and Twitter. And we also write a monthly newsletter, which you can sign up to on our website, which is www.bookcastclub.com. If you want to support the podcast financially, we also have a Patreon account. You can sign up for as little as $2 a month. We offer early access to the podcast, monthly bonus episodes, personalized book recommendations, and books in the post. We also have a Ko-fi, so you can make one-off contributions if you would like to do that. The link for that is in our show notes, as are all the books and the other things that we discussed today. But however you choose to support us, we would want you to know that we really appreciate it. Yeah, and so next month, also, while I'm talking about how to support the podcast, we are going to do a Q&A episode, right? So next September, in September, 25th of September, I think we're going to record it. So all four of us are going to do the Q&A episode. So if you have questions for any of us, you can email them to us, as I just said, or you can message us on Instagram or Twitter and ask us anything, really. We don't really mind. I think there's lots of cool things you could ask us. I think we're interesting people.
We're open books.
So let's talk about fantasy, shall we?
Yes, let us continue on with our fantasy recommendations. I'm going to be honest, I've taken a slightly different angle to these fantasy recommendations than the last time. Because the last time it was fantasy for beginners.
Yeah, sorry.
Go on.
Not to tell tales, but yeah, I said to you last time we're going to talk about fantasy for beginners, and you completely disregarded my instruction there. And then remember we wrote...
I disregarded your instructions. I don't think I've ever done that. Completely. I follow instructions.
I was like, let's make some recommendations for people who don't read a lot of fantasy and about like good like gateway books or whatever. And you came up and you're like, oh, fuck that. I didn't do it. They're all series. They're all like 1,000 pages long.
When I said intro, I wasn't thinking, when you said that, I wasn't thinking books that are like long and part of series as being the intimidating part. I thought more of like as far as like the world building or, you know, that whatever. Type of thing being the intimidating thing. I don't think series are intimidating. Posh.
I said something about standalones and you were like, fuck that.
Yeah. I actually think I have more standalones in this bit than I did okay. last time around. But right. I feel like now we've kind of graduated. We're gonna assume you took our Fantasy for Beginners episode to heart and you've educated yourself. Now it's time for some meat and potatoes.
102.
Yeah. What fantasy have you got to recommend, Sarah? I'm quite excited to hear what you have.
I thought we could talk about... So last time, you recommended some stuff to me. I mean, I already knew about them, of course. But I've read them in the meantime, so I thought we could discuss those.
Oh, yay.
And then I thought I'd make a couple of other recommendations.
How exciting.
So shall we quickly talk about Lynn Flewelling for a start?
Let's talk about her.
Yeah, I feel like we have done this a few times. But yeah, we have. Whatever, we'll be brief. You go. You introduce Lynn Swelling.
Lynn Swelling has written 10 fantasy novels. 7 of them are set in this fantasy series called the Nightrunner series, which follows a couple named Alec and Sarah Joel, who are gentlemen spies for the royal family. They do all the seedy business that the royal family can't be seen as doing, trying to untangle plots, that type of thing. And they're also a gay couple in love. And the books, I guess you could kind of call them fantasy romances, but they're definitely leaning way more on like the fantasy adventure plot lines. They're very fun. They're rip-roaring adventures. They've got a lot of really great side characters as well. And they are queer, queer, queer. Not just like the main relationship of the books obviously has a gay couple front and center as the heroes of the book. And it's just basically accepted by everybody without much question, but there's also lots of queer side characters, lots of queer world building that's like baked into the books. The whole like royal family is a matriarchy. The people who rule the army are women. So there's a lot of very kind of inverted expectations from a lot of different fantasy worlds. And it feels very organic and natural to the storytelling.
Totally. Yeah, totally. I just remembered where we talked about Lynn Flewelling a lot in the Pride episode that we did, which was a Patreon episode. So if you want to go back to our Patreon and hear that episode, we both talked quite a lot about that and also a bit more personally about why that's like so important to us. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they are amazing, absolutely amazing. Yeah, so I've read the first three now and I have so much respect for her, really. The way that she is able to write these characters, the way that she just incorporates like queer things, all kinds of things, just so seamlessly into her world. It's just incredible. I was going to say, yeah, you said fantasy romance, yes or no, if it's a romance book. I always am a bit hesitant to use the word romance because I feel that people who do read romance, if you say that to them and they go and read these kind of books, they'll probably be disappointed because it's not at all kind of what they're used to. So I'm always... And then also I feel like there's such that people who don't read romance are like, ugh.
Yeah.
So I sort of avoid that word. So yeah, I wouldn't call it a fantasy romance. It just has a romance in it, but there's not a lot of sort of on-page stuff about like their actual relationship, I would say.
No.
So you might be a bit disappointed if you're a romance reader, but yeah, they're just brilliant. I really recommend them. And I just, when I read them, I'm just sitting there like in awe, like this was written in the 90s.
I know.
It sounds like something that would come out today, like a YA book that would come out today.
I think it's better than what's coming out today. I mean, I don't think any queer...
In terms of inclusivity, I think it sounds like a book from this year.
Yeah, like
it's incredible.
And it's not, like I said, it's not just that relationship. Like, for example, when we talk about like the queer world building, for example, one of the elements that you find out very early on in the series is that there's a brothel street, basically, where there's a whole bunch of like houses for sex work, and one that's handled really well. Like the sex workers themselves are not like mistreated. It's definitely just like a part of the culture. And the like these brothels basically have different lights outside of the brothels that indicate the types of experiences you could have, like if you want men searching men, women searching women, both, whatever, right? And that's just like baked into the world building as this like perfectly acceptable thing. And I really like that. So it just shows that like it's not just like, oh, like these couples are acceptable, but like all elements of queer life are just like acceptable and unquestioned in this society.
Yeah, it's like in the fabric of the world in a way that I feel that a lot of authors aren't capable of. Like the way that she reimagines how the world could be is just incredible. Like I think most every other example that I can think of, it's just like, oh, these people are gay, like they just put them in there as an element, but the world is still super heteronormative, don't worry. She just like completely turns that on its head, so I just have nothing but respect for her. Really.
And I really hope you get to the prequel trilogy, which is called the Bone Dolls Twin. I was thinking of the Andrea Stewart book and I couldn't think of the right title because I was thinking of Bone Shard Daughter. It's called the Bone Dolls Twin, and it centers a character who is trans, and that narrative and the way it works into the story is very interesting. And Lynn Flewelling herself is actually a psychologist that specializes in assisting people through their transitions. So she approaches that subject with like a lot of nuance and thought, and really, really enjoy that trilogy. I actually think that trilogy might even be a little bit better than the Alec and Sarah Joel books.
Oh, well, yeah, I look forward to it. So yeah, I've read the first three Alec and Sarah Joel books, so I'm up to the fourth one. In case you weren't sure what number came after three.
You're in for a treat. The fourth book is absolutely my favorite book in the series.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I really liked the third one. I know people don't love it that much, but I thought it was great.
I thought the third one was really good too, but what she did is that she wrote the first three books in the Knight Rider series, and then she went and wrote the Bone Dolls Twin and wrote those three books, and then she returned to the Alec and Sarah Jill books. And right. So you can tell when you read that fourth book that she's had like years of craft under her belt returning mm-hmm. to that story. And it just, you can just, I just think the writing is stronger, the characterization stronger. Everything about that book is just rips.
So would you say to go to now to go to Bone Dolls?
No, I would say okay. definitely finish out the entire series and then go okay. to the Bone Dolls Twin. I mean, she did. That's not the publication order, but it makes the most sense, I think, as a reader to okay. get all of Alec and Sarah Jill's story, because the Bone Dolls Twin takes place, I think, like 300 years before the events of the main series. So I don't think it's worth interrupting the flow of Alec and Sarah Jill's story.
Right. Okay. So you're not looking at a Robin Hobb scenario where everything's kind of unhappening at the
yes.
same time.
Yeah. No.
Okay, cool. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I was going to recommend, I know we had talked about Robin Hobb when we did our for beginners, right? As like a great place to start and read her Realm of the Elderlings series. But I want to talk about, and this is going to be controversial, the books by her that I think are even better than the Realm of the Elderlings. I freaking love these books. They are, in my opinion, god tier level fantasy, and that is the Soldier Son trilogy. I've got my copy here. Oh my god, it's so good. It starts off with a book called Shaman's Crossing, and it's following a character named Navarre. It's set in this world that feels very much like early 1800s Western America. And it's following, but it's had like a royalty thing going on. And it's following a character named Navarre, who comes from this family of nobles where they've just recently ascended to nobility. And there's a lot of pressure for him to like be the kind of best, you know, because, and to fit into society as nobles. And he's the second son of his family. And the way this world works, the second son of the family is supposed to become a soldier. Early on in his childhood, he is kidnapped by the... I shouldn't say kidnapping, but he is essentially kidnapped by this like tribe of people. And without getting into too many spoilers, he ends up getting this kind of magical mark on him that forever links him to this tribe of people. And then he goes on to attend this academy where he is training to become a soldier in the academy. And the first book really follows as the tensions are building between these people and their tribe and Navarre's people, who are the conquerors and colonialists. And he finds himself on both sides of this conflict in a way that is incredibly interesting, because he has all these family loyalties, of course, to the colonizers, but also this deep spiritual and emotional connection because of this almost strange religious experience he had as a child to these people that are being conquered and what is happening to them. And it is fantastic. I don't want to get into too many of the details because it is dark. Like, the things that happen to Navarre are like way worse, in my opinion, than anything that happens to Fitz. She goes there in this trilogy. She does not hold back. And the way the world building elements work is so interesting as you go deeper and deeper and deeper into this book and learn more about the cultures and magic and religious stuff happening. It's just incredible. And yeah, I just freaking loved it. And also, Robin Hobb is tackling fatness in this trilogy, which I have never read a fantasy book where fatness is tackled or dealt with. And it was really interesting. And so many people really don't like this series. I think because they don't like a lot of the reviews that I read of the series read very fat phobic, like very fat phobic. And it's very odd to me because the whole point of the book and the series seems to be kind of tackling these things. So yeah, it's incredible. It's in my opinion, even better than The Realm of the Elderlings, and especially the second book in the series. Like, I got to the end of that book and like my jaw was on the floor. Like, that second book is long, and I think I read it in like a weekend. I just could not put it down. Fantastic stuff.
I'm so glad you brought this up, because I had completely forgotten about this trilogy. I knew that she had written it, but I completely forgot that she had written those. And I think I forgot that she had written those as Robin Hobb, because she writes under two names. Mm-hmm. And she writes other books that... Are they fantasy, the ones that she writes under her other name?
She writes different styles of fantasy under the Megan Lindholm books. More urban fantasy.
Yeah, that's right. Urban fantasy. That's right. Yeah. Because I knew that I wasn't that interested in those. And I think in my head I was done with Robin Hobb. So I'm delighted.
Oh, you are not. You've got...
Oh, I forgot. I completely forgot. How exciting. How did I forget that?
These have really low ratings on Goodreads. Like, these are some of the lowest rated fantasy books on Goodreads. And I think it's incredible that so many people really dislike them, because I held off reading them for a really long time because mm-hmm. I was just expecting to hate them. And I read the first one where I was like, what is wrong with people? Like, this is incredible stuff. A lot of people find them to be too slow paced. They don't like Navarre as a character. They don't like, I don't want to spoil what happens to him in the second book, but they don't like what happens to him in the second book and what he becomes in the second book. And that's where I think a lot of the fat phobia is coming from in these reviews. And yeah, but the trilogy itself is just mind-blowingly good.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's spectacular stuff. I can't wait to reread it. I'm currently rereading Assassin's Fate, and after I get done with that, which will cap off my Realm of the Elderlings rereading, I'm going to be grabbing Shaman's Crossing.
Yeah, I'm about to reread the Liveship Traders trilogy, I think.
Oh, so good.
So I'm excited for you. Yeah, I fucking love it. I love Kenneth so much. He just... I feel bad for it, like I shouldn't, but I just, the heart wants what it wants.
Yeah.
If you haven't read the Liveship Traders trilogy, Kenneth is basically a psycho.
Yeah.
Just sort of super, yeah, it's like just a psychotic villain, basically. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, he just, I don't know, does it for me. I don't know what to tell you. Yeah, that's exciting. I had completely forgotten about that. Now let's talk, shall we talk about Kushiel's Jard? Is this a good time for this?
Let's talk about it, because I have not heard your final thoughts on this, and I am eager.
I didn't realize I was holding out on you.
You were.
So yeah, I read Kushiel's Jard the last sort of 2 months, which is your favorite fantasy book, would you say?
No.
One of?
It's definitely not better than Robin Hobb, but she's in my top five.
Okay. So yeah, Chris has talked about Kushiel's Jard quite a few times. If you go back and listen to the fantasy for beginners... Oh, actually, did you talk about it then? Maybe not.
I think I did, because I was in the process of like either reading it or I had just read it. So I think it was one of the ones I was talking about as a current reading.
Yeah, so I finally read it. So it's 1,000 pages or thereabouts. It's one of those massive... I got those like great trade paperbacks that you have like Game of Thrones in. And it is about a woman who is working for... So you're in a high fantasy world, so there's a bunch of different kingdoms, and it's like all completely fantastical, and it's a highly political story, and it's about a woman who is working for one of the houses in this world, and she's basically like a sex worker, but it's particular, the way that it works, it's a very important part of how like politics and transactions happen. So she's, the person that she works for is quite an important political figure, and her work and the things that the other people who live in the house do is like super important for his power and how he's able to negotiate and trade and that kind of thing. So she has quite a lot of autonomy. I don't know if that's fair to say, but she has like a lot of agency, I would say, as a character. And the work that she does is like highly skilled and highly, highly valued. So it's quite a different take on any kind of sex work than you would see in basically anything else, I would say. It's about the houses that are sort of the houses that rule and the different kingdoms that rule, and they're essentially at conflict with each other, and that's kind of building throughout the book. There's a large war building, so it's about people trying to grapple for power about this war, and it's about the people who are invading. There's a group of people invading across the border, so how that's happening, and she gets involved with this. Yeah, and I read it on your recommendation, slightly nervously, as you know. I think we talked about that in the Pride episode as well.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm scared of this book. Really, really liked it, actually.
Yes.
I'm really, really glad that I heard your description of it, actually, because I would have been... I had a very incorrect impression of this book, which is all from the reviews, I have to say. So all the reviews focus on the sex in this book fastidiously. They're all describing it, how much sex there is in this book, how it's very detailed, blah 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 blah, which I'm very conflicted about, because it makes up... I mean, yes, okay, yeah, let's discuss this. So, and you said in your review that you said that aspect of the book is quite oversold or like
over-exaggerated, yeah.
Which I could not agree with more. Like, so people describe it as like the erotic fantasy book, the sex book. I would be surprised if the sex scenes make up 5% of the book.
Yeah, it's so much more than that. I mean, obviously sex is a currency in this book, you know, it is a currency in this world. It is something that is religiously established in this book and in this world. So obviously it plays an important role for the character. She is a sex worker, you know, so it doesn't deny the importance of sex in this book. And I don't think that, you know, to say that the sex is oversold in this book denies the importance and the role it's playing in these characters' lives and the role it's playing in establishing the politics in this world. But it is not an erotica book, you know? I mean, the sex scenes are definitely as explicit as you can get in fantasy. Like, I don't think there's any fantasy book I've read with more explicit sex scenes. I mean, she's talking about all the bits and parts, you know? So I guess in the sense that it's extremely explicit, yes. But in the sense that it's an erotica book, absolutely not. I mean, just, I completely disagree.
But you agree with me.
I agree with you, yes.
We disagree with them.
We are on an island disagreeing with the people calling. Yeah. You know, when I see people call it like 50 Shades of Grey for fantasy readers, I just want to scream. Way. I just want to scream.
I think that's just because there's elements of BDSM in it.
Exactly.
And people get very excited by that. Or not excited. One of the two. They get very affected by it in one way or the other. And they really focus on that. Which, I don't know. I don't know if I even agree that it has very explicit sex scenes, to be honest, because it does describe the sort of BDSM components of it.
I mean, she's describing, like, Nama's pearl and all that different stuff. I don't know how much more, like, detailed you could possibly get.
I didn't think it was that. I don't know. It was not. Okay. Coming from the context that I did where you read all this stuff and people are like, oh, my God, erotica, blah, blah, blah. I was surprised at how much Fade to Black there was in it, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I'm also somebody that is, like, not easily shocked by sex in books. Like, it doesn't affect me at all. In fact, I wish there was more sex in books, like, all the time.
Yeah.
I think nearly every book is improved by a good sex scene. So it wasn't anything that was gonna, like, affect me as a reader. But yeah, I love those books. How did you feel about, like, the politics? Because I feel like, for me, the politics in that series is, like, A+. I don't think I think she's better than George R. R. Martin in terms of, like, political intrigue and stuff like that.
Yeah, this is where we slightly diverge a bit, I think, because you are more into this kind of heavy politicking than I am. Mm-hmm. So I agree that she's, like, as good, better something. She's definitely on like, kind of level with George R. R. Martin, but that's not something that I, like, massively love in a fantasy novel. So I was much more there for the characters. Like, I really liked her relationship with, like, the other people in the house and with her guard, whose name I can't remember.
Jocelyn.
What's his name? Jocelyn, yeah. Like, I liked the way, and when sort of things happen to her and she has to kind of deal with that, and the way that she kind of manages that, because she ends up being taken as a slave by one of the other sort of kingdoms, the way that she kind of manages that and sort of tactfully is able to get out of it, I really liked all that. And I thought that she wrote the kind of way that humans are so good and bad and not, I really thought that was great.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual kind of political intrigue part of it was probably my least favorite part, I would say. And especially at the beginning, where there's a lot of, like, back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I think I texted you right when I was a few hundred pages in, like, right, what is happening?
Yeah.
What do I need to know?
It is complicated. Like, it did get to a point when I first read it where I literally had to sit down with a piece of paper and, like, draw a family tree and be like, this person was accused of assassinating this person, and, like, draw out all the connections. But once I did that, I loved the intrigue, and I loved and I think that the subsequent books get easier to follow the intrigue and understand it, and I also think that they do even better. Like, I really liked Kushiel's Dart, but Kushiel's Chosen for me was where I was like, wow, this is, like, one of the best fantasy books everything I've ever read. And the writing is exquisite. I love
the writing. Yeah, the writing's good.
It's amazing.
It's very good.
I'm so glad you liked it.
Good, yeah. I'm really happy I finally read it. It took me a long time.
Once the plot gets going, it really does, like, rip. And the chapters are short, which also makes it kind of an easier read, I think.
Yeah, there's a point about 200 pages in or so where it, like, it really gets going.
Yeah.
So there's quite a lot of build up, which was a little bit hard for me to get through. But then once that happened, it really started moving along pretty quickly.
Now, since we've been talking about political intrigue, I think that's a great segue for my next book, which is Rules of Ascension by David Bicot. And I own a first edition hardback of this book, which is, like, one of my most, like, prized possessions. I love it so much. And Rules of Ascension is the first book in the Winds of the Four Lands by David Bicot. And it is a grand political saga. If you liked the politics of Game of Thrones, like if seasons 1 through 4 of Game of Thrones were like your favorite seasons of television ever, I really think you need to read Rules of Ascension. And it's set in a world where there are a whole bunch of different kingdoms, and there's a very interconnected way in which people actually rise to the throne of that world. They're not like one royal family, and then a person dies, and then it's on to the next person. Instead, there's multiple ruling families that can rise to the ascendancy of this throne, which is why the first book is called Rules of Ascension. And it's following, well, I should say, there are two, like, races of people in this world. There are Iyandi, who are, like, normal human beings, and then there are Kirsi, who have magical abilities. And the Kirsi people have been persecuted and downtrodden for many, many years, and many people view them as, like, suspicious, you can't trust them, they're magical. A lot of their magical abilities have to do with, like, prophecy and stuff like that, so people are very skeptical of them. And they face a lot of difficult treatment in this book. But their gifts of prophecy means that they're widely sought after by the Iyandi rulers to serve as counselors. So, pretty soon, Iyandi noblemen start to die like flies in very mysterious circumstances that make it seem as though other Iyandi people are responsible for these deaths. But as the reader, you get the hint that maybe there's some sort of grand conspiracy amongst these Kirsi counselors who work for the Iyandi to frame all of these people and take over. And you're trying to figure out what in the hell is happening. And the story is told mainly through two people's perspective. One person that you're following is a Kirsi who is helping a young man who has been accused of murdering his betrothed. But as the reader, you know that he did not murder his betrothed. He was a victim of this, like, Kirsi conspiracy going on. And you follow these two people as basically they're kind of on the run. And that's kind of the end for viewing this grander political story. That's as simply as I can put the plot. This shit is complicated. There is no getting around it. There are a lot of characters. There are a lot of elements of the world building. There are a lot of different countries with very different rules. People in this book change sides. So people who you expect to be on the Kirsi side at the beginning flip to the Iyandi side and vice versa. There's a lot of different, like, backstabbing to keep track of. It's a lot. But it is fully fleshed out. The characters are amazing. And once you really kind of get past the first, like, 100-150 pages, the world building and the politicking just clicks in a way that's very satisfying. You're like, oh, I see what's happening here. And yeah, I love these books. It's a 5-book series. It is detailed, beautiful, wonderfully done, and I feel very validated because I got Mercedes from Mercy's Bookish Musings to read this book, and she really liked it. And I feel like if me and Mercedes agree on a fantasy book, that is usually a pretty good sign.
Yeah, totally agree. If you and Mercedes both like a fantasy book, that's like a green light for me. It's sort of a guarantee, basically. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting to this. I haven't had time yet, but
it's so good. It's really, really good. I just think it's so underrated, and it's such a shame. Mm. And, like, the covers are not great. I don't think they're helped by these extremely 90s cheesy covers. But if you can get past that and read the content, it's pretty phenomenal stuff.
You are so good at finding older fantasy novels that a lot of people would not read because the covers are horrendous, by the way. You always, like, come out with this stuff, and I'm like, wow, you actually opened that and gave it a go.
I'm a big fan of shopping at used bookstores where a lot of these books are, so that's why.
Yeah, you're really good at it. You always pull out some incredible gems, which is cool. All right, so the last one I'm going to talk about is actually kind of an anti-recommendation or something. So I mentioned in the last Patreon episode that I DNF'd it. And it's Priory of the Orange Tree by Samantha Shannon. And I thought I wanted to mention it here. I wouldn't normally talk about a book that I DNF'd because I feel that it's rather unfair. But it's such a popular book. Like, if you are a fantasy reader, you will know this book already. Like, so she wrote The Bone Season, I think they're called, a few years ago. And that series is still ongoing, I think. But The Priory of the Orange Tree has been absolutely everywhere. Everyone's talking about it. And it's supposed to be, like, the fantasy book of 2022 or 21, maybe. And I was super, super disappointed by this, and I wanted to share my truth, basically. First of all, it is high fantasy, and the basic premise of the story is that the main character is working for a queen. She's in that kind of It's a like medieval sort of period, as a lot of fantasy, high fantasy books are. And she's working in that sort of like the queen's inner circle, where she's like, I'm not exactly sure what the term is, but they help her like get dressed and they look after her and they're really like her close companions. So she's one of these people. So there's a lot of quite cool stuff in there about how there's kind of a lot of politics and disagreement between these people themselves, and like who gets to be super close to the queen and who isn't close to the queen, and how they kind of backstab each other all the time. So that was quite fun. And the main character is essentially, she's from a different like country, I think, and she's kind of there as a bit of a mole. This isn't explained super well at the beginning, so maybe I read about the first 300 pages, so maybe it's explained more later, but she's there kind of to protect the queen, but they don't know her true identity. So but the people that she came from don't like the queen, so I'm not sure how that all works out. So that's the premise. It's supposed to be this kind of like, I'm sure you've seen the marketing, it's like the queer fantasy novel. People are like, oh, it's this new thing in queer fantasy. That's like how it's kind of sold. But I just found it to be, it's incredibly heteronormative. So if you've seen all the same marketing that I have, and you're like, oh, this sounds really cool, I'd like to see this kind of gender flipped. I think it's like supposed to be like this feminist retelling or gender flipped or something. I just didn't find that to be the case at all. So yes, it is like a matriarchal society and it's the queen who's in charge, but the entire plot and the entire tension and plot point is about the queen needing to get pregnant and have a child, right? So I was like, great. So this is like such a tired fantasy trope, like the royal person desperately needing to have a child. So she needs to get married, and she has to get married, right, to a man. So that's like the whole plot of the novel, is that the queen needs to find a husband, needs to get pregnant, needs to have a child. I think the child has to be a daughter. I think, I can't quite remember. But I mean, for me, that's not really good enough in terms of like this like super feminist retelling, because it's still all about like who's going to marry the queen. Is it going to be him? Is it going to be him? You know? And there is supposed to be a queer love story is like the center of it. So I had read like the first couple of hundred pages, but it was like nothing was getting going at all. And it was all very like implied and off page and kind of like chased, and I was not enjoying it at all. So that was my feelings of it. I didn't feel that it was, in terms of like a feminist retelling or trying to like subvert tropes or whatever, I feel like it completely failed in that respect. So if that's what you go into the novel expecting, I don't know, adjust your expectations, I suppose.
That stinks, because that has one of the best book covers ever. Everything about that book, and it's so massive, it just looks like one of those books that I want to like sink my teeth into every time I see it at the bookstore. But the reason I kind of talked to you a little bit about this before we started recording, I've been just very kind of hesitant about that book, because the overwhelming majority of people who I see really reviewing it and giving a lot of raving reviews are people who primarily read young adult fantasy. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there is a certain type of adult fantasy coming out lately, where it's got the tone and writing style of YA with adult characters, and therefore people call it adult fantasy. And I just get really tired of this, because I don't agree. I don't think that the only thing that makes a book YA is the age of the character. And like, I've gotten into so many fights with people about this on book discussion forums. Like, I completely disagree. It is not the thing that makes something feel YA to me.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's in the writing style.
Yeah.
There are plenty of books that I can think of where the main character is a teenager that are not.
Exactly. That's exactly like Robin Hobb, Assassin's Apprentice. Like, that first book is not a YA book, because the tone, writing, depth of character, and depth of storytelling really is just, it's just not comparable to young adult fiction.
Totally.
And I've read a lot of books where I feel like I'm reading a book that just feels like it wants to be a YA novel, but I think what's happened is that there is a growing market of people who graduate from reading YA books in the sense that they no longer relate to the angstiness of the characters, and they no longer relate to the teens, but they still want that writing style and tone. And I think people are writing to fill that void over the past 10, 15 years. I've noticed it.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that's a shame, because I'm going to be a total snob and say I think it sucks. Like, I'm not a fan of it.
Yeah, I don't poo-poo its existence, as you do. But I wish it was marketed more clearly, because these books are marketed as if they're really, like, adult. And they're just not.
I don't mind its existence. I do mind the fact that I feel like it's becoming ubiquitous.
Yeah.
I do feel like there is a lack of books coming out that I feel like read like proper adult fantasy. Like a lot of the stuff coming out just feels very YA.
Yep, I agree. Before, when we were talking about how Lynn Fleming manages to kind of change the way that like humans are and think about how the world could be, and I said that some authors fail to do that, this is exactly the novel I was thinking. So yeah, I don't know if I think it's a bad book. I just don't feel that it is worthy of the reviews that it gets.
Yeah.
So I was disappointed by it.
If you're wanting queer fantasy, we recommend Lynn Fleming first.
Yeah. Yeah. Or feminist fantasy. Like,
yeah.
It just isn't that.
That's a shame. Shall I talk about my last one to cap us off?
Yeah, let's. Then we better stop talking.
My last one is This Bad Boy, The Last Dragon Lord by Joanne Burton. I absolutely love this book. It is so underrated. I'm going to talk about this one kind of briefly because this is what I would properly call a fantasy romance. It has a romantic storyline from beginning to end. You do see the kind of happily ever after thing. And it's about this world where there are true dragons. But the true dragons live very aloof from human society. But there are people who can turn into dragon form. They're were-dragons. And they serve as kind of the liaison between true dragons and humanity. And whenever there's this kind of like deep political problem that humans can't resolve, the dragons will step in by sending their were-dragons to resolve the issue. And so this is following a man who is, they believe, to be the last were-dragon. They cannot find any other people who can change into the form. And this is very troubling because in order for him to find a mate and produce children and continue on the line of were-dragons, he's got to find somebody who is a were-dragon so he can fall in love. And they mate for life and they have these like very deep loves, right? So there's a political situation that arises. I think somebody dies under mysterious circumstances. The politics and stuff for me is not the purpose of this book. I really like the romance and the characters. And he has to go to the world with his fellow committee of were-dragons and go to this nation and try and straighten them out and figure out what the hell happened. And it's there that he meets a woman who has the potential to turn into a dragon, and he needs to fall in love. So it's very cheesy sounding, but the characters are very good, and they're very fun to read about, and the situations they find themselves in are very funny at times. And it has a pretty good political intrigue plot, even though I can't remember much of it anymore because it just hasn't stuck with me. But I do remember finding the political intrigue plot to be quite fun, and there being like a whole bunch of different like court scenes where everybody's trying to explain the situation and tying themselves into knots in front of these were-dragons that are overseeing everything. And it's just glorious fun. Like, I just think this book is so much fun, and like, people not reading this are just missing out on a good time. Like, if you want to read about were-dragons screwing and falling in love, come on.
Like, what we've all had, I'm sure.
I really think you need to read The Last Dragon Lord. And I just think it's great. And it has a blurb on it from Robin Hobb. And so, you know, Robin Hobb tells us to read something. And Robin Hobb said, The Last Dragon Lord by Joanne Burton features villains who have not lost their humanity and heroes who are still capable of making mistakes. Court intrigues are entangled with unabashed romance in this fast-paced and satisfying story. The reader gets a sense of the world's rich history and unique magic. She's a much better reviewer than me. I'm just like, were-dragons having sex. Go for it.
I don't know if your review is doing much for the... to
convince it's people a great to book. It does sound
interesting.
It's really, really fun. Sometimes I just think a fantasy book is there to lighten us a little bit.
Oh, I love it. What an amazing final recommendation. Before we go, I want to show you something. I meant to bring this up earlier. I don't think you know this, but in a few episodes, we're doing another book club book, right?
Okay.
Yeah, you look so nervous.
I don't know where this is going.
Just breathe. And Alice and I decided, we made an executive decision last time what the book would be, because it's you, me, and Alice. Okay. And I've already started it. And I'm going to show it to you. All right. Oh, okay. And you can do your reaction. Ready?
Okay. I am ready. Oh, I'm but you can't say what it so is. Excited.
Thought you would be.
Yes.
Look at your face.
I am thrilled.
Yeah, I thought you would be. Oh, but we can't say what it is. It's a surprise.
Okay. Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah.
We will leave our audience on that cliffhanger. That's a juicy little treat to dangle in front of the audience. I love it.
I wish I could have seen your face. That was amazing.
Oh, I'm so happy.
Yeah, Alice is like, Chris is going to be so happy.
Oh, that's so good. Yay.
I wonder if anyone could guess. Probably not, I would say.
I don't think so, actually. Because I don't think I've talked about it much on this podcast, actually.
No. But Alice is happy as well, so that's another hint.
Oh, yay.
Yeah, wicked.
Well, thank you guys for listening to the podcast. This has been our continuation of fantasy recommendations. And don't forget, if you want to send us questions for the Q&A, please submit those. You can email us, you can write us on Instagram, you can write us on Twitter. However you want to communicate with us, we would really love to know your questions. And, you know, pretty much anything within reason is in bounds. So let's hear the questions. I'm quite excited.
Me too, I think. Send us nice stuff. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed.
Yes, thank you.
Bye.